I'm excited, man. Let's do it.
Rookie Fever, the show that looks closely at NFL rookie values all year long.
Let's go! Let's get this show going, man.
Hurry up, hurry up!
The Rookie Fever Podcast.
We're just having fun and we're working, baby. That's it,
baby. Let's go. Wait, see.
Welcome to the Rookie Fever Podcast. I'm Mike the Feverish Finero, and this is another 2022 Rookie Player Profile. I'm here with Paul Perdicchese of Saturday to Sunday Podcast. He brought us the Devonta Smith Rookie Player Profile this time last year, and I'm happy to have him back to help us again, this time with a highly polarizing QB prospect here. Paul, how are you?
Doing good. Glad to be back. Looking forward to talking about, one of the more polarizing quarterback prospects that we have this year, and a lot to break down in trying to decipher, is he worth an early NFL pick? Is he worth an early dynasty rookie pick? A lot to unload and unpack with this player.
Yeah, this player is hot. Like, if you're in a super flex rookie mock, like, everyone's trying to figure out how early or when they should draft this player. Paul, are you ready to get into this?
I'm ready.
Rookie Fevers. Rookie Player Profile Edition.
All right, Paul, tell our listeners who you chose and why you chose him.
So I chose Liberty quarterback Malik Willis because, to me, when I studied this entire quarterback class, and we were just talking before we went on live, it's just such an unusual quarterback class compared to last year and even compared to a lot of the quarterback classes we've had. Like, I mean, think about the year that we had, you know, Sam Darnold and Josh Allen and Baker Mayfield and Lamar Jackson. Like, there was so much excitement and buzz about that quarterback class. And then obviously last year, you know, generational type talents like Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields. And then this year, we started the year thinking it was going to be Oklahoma quarterback Spencer Rattler and UNC quarterback Sam Howell. And those guys aren't even in the mix now in terms of the top of the draft, round one, Rattler transferring, not even coming out. So Willis is the kind of guy who's emerged as those guys fell off. Willis was the guy who kind of emerged. I really came onto his radar last year. And I walked away last summer saying to myself back then that he was going to be the first dynasty rookie quarterback taken because he had the upside to have more of a fantasy impact than even a guy like Rattler or Howell, you know, back then. And I talked a lot about over the summer of why I was so excited about him as a player. And I think he has kind of kept that momentum. There were some peaks and valleys here, but I think now he's riding a momentum up, and I'm excited to dig in a little deeper with you. But I am excited about this player in terms of the upside and ceiling that he truly
brings. Nice. I love that we started out that way because that's what we hear a lot about is his upside. This question is going to be a long one. Okay. I'm going to take you somewhere. Okay. I'm going to take you to Area 51. Don't worry. We're still talking about Malik Willis, but I'm going to take you to Area 51. This is how it works. Malik rushed for over 1,800 yards and 27 TDs over the past 2 years at Liberty. And he did this with way more than straight up speed. He had 51. See where the 51 came in? He had 51 broken tackles last year alone. But there's a flip side. And that's kind of how it goes with Malik. The flip side is he was sacked 51 times. This seems to be the case with Malik. That's why I wanted to start here. For everything we love, his rushing floor, even arm strength, upside, there always seems to be a downside. He's often described as a developmental prospect. So, Paul, here's my question. Are you concerned by what Malik Willis, are you more concerned by what Malik Willis can't do? Or are you more excited about what he can do?
I'm more excited about what he can do. And, you know, you're talking to somebody right here who was at the peak of the Josh Allen fan club. And it was strictly because I looked at a guy like Josh Allen and I was more excited about the upside and traits that he possessed and less concerned about the flaws and concerns that he had. And obviously, anybody who remembers that draft cycle knows there was tremendous pushback. I heard about it on Twitter constantly that I was so dead wrong on Josh Allen, that he was going to be a gigantic bust, that there was no way anybody with his concerns and flaws and accuracy issues and completion percentage and a litany of other things could never succeed and develop at the next level. But I just kept coming back to the positive traits that he possessed. And it's kind of very similar to the Malik Willis conversation. And does it mean every guy who is very polarizing like this is going to end up hitting like Josh Allen did? Absolutely not. You know, I just recently recorded a podcast with Mark Schofield over at Saturday Sunday, and we said, yeah, it might be 20-25%. That might be the percentage chances that he hits, but the upside is so tantalizing that I'm more excited about the positives and the traits that get me excited about this player than I am about the flaws and concerns. I'm not sure there's much of a middle ground. I'll be brutally honest. He's my QB1, but I could see this going either way. But I just think the ceiling of it and the excitement on those, some of those positive traits, and I'm sure we'll talk about some of them momentarily, but I'm more excited about the positives that he brings than I am concerned about the negatives.
Yeah, Paul, you were definitive about that. I barely got the question out before you answered it. So I'm a big believer on how people answer a question more than even the content of the answer. Like, you really were definitive about how excited you are versus how concerned you are. Malik impressed at the Senior Bowl, had a great combine. And one ESPN article headline read, NFL quarterback prospect Malik Willis brings a once-in-a-lifetime pro day to Liberty. Paul, totally unfair question, but with what you know to date, what probability, and it sounds like we already talked about it, what probability does Malik have of developing into a good or, if not great, NFL starter? Is it that 25% you were saying?
Yeah, I don't think there's going to be much of a middle ground. Now, listen, if you're saying the middle ground is Tyrod Taylor type, sure. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, then it's a higher percentage than 25%. But I think now we are in a time in the NFL that the level of quarterback play is as good as it's ever been in my entire NFL fandom. And that Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes playoff battle is going to resonate for years. That if you don't have a quarterback that could match them and do some of the things they were able to do in that game, you got no shot. Cincinnati got past Kansas City the following week because Joe Burrow was a special player that can match that, right? So when you're looking at quarterbacks now, and that's why I struggle so much with this class, because I like Kenny Pickett. I think he can be a functional above average starter, but is that good enough anymore? Mm-hmm. I wouldn't want the Giants. I'm a Giants fan, as anyone who follows Saturday, Sunday knows. And I think this will probably be the last year Daniel Jones is there, but I wouldn't want Kenny Pickett because I want to shoot for higher than that. So pivoting back to Malik Willis, yeah, in terms of being a very good or great starting quarterback, I probably would put the percentages only around 25%. We know 50% of first-round quarterbacks bust anyway.
Right,
you know,
right.
So right there, any quarterback who goes in round one is basically, just from the straight analytics side of it, it's a 50-50 hit rate. So right there, I would say even from the 50% that he does hit, there's more levels of concern because the level of competition he played at, you know, some of the things he was asked to do. Mm-hmm. But I still believe that if you put him in the right, if you build an offense early that caters to his strengths and let him develop everything. Again, we're only entitled to what we see on Saturday, Sunday. I mean, what we see on YouTube and what we see on the combine and the pro day. But all intents and purposes, this is a guy that's got his head on right, is a guy who is really good on the whiteboard, is a guy who breathes, lives football. And that's all stuff that makes me a little bit less concerned, going back to your first question earlier, a little bit less concerned about the negatives I see right now and more excited about the pros. Because if all this other stuff about his personality and character and makeup are true, well, to me, that gives me more belief that he could continue to develop to fix some of those things that are obviously right now flaws and concerns in his game. And when you support him with an NFL coaching staff, NFL players, I mean, he played with not one guy who's going to be an NFL player.
Great point.
You know, at Liberty. You talked about some of the amount of sacks he took. Again, it's impossible to know without talking to the kid himself. But my guess is He tried to be superhuman. He tried to make stuff out of nothing. And at times that gets players, you know, into trouble, but they feel like that's what, how they have to play in the surrounding environment and the lack of maybe what's around them. They have to feel like every play they have to try to make something big happen. He's going to have to learn at the NFL level that that's not how it works. You got to live to play another down. And I think his coaches, and he might even understand that already. So I'm less concerned about like taking the sacks or trying to, you know, play hero ball or something like that. I think that can be something that's reined in him.
Yeah, before we hit the record button, we kind of looked at free agency as maybe as an indictment on all of these quarterbacks. Like, it doesn't look as if NFL teams are interested. And maybe it really comes down to what you just said earlier in your answer to that question, which was kind of like you said with the Giants. It's like, yeah, I could get Pickett, but he's not going to get me to the, he's not going to get me to the promised land. Like, that's not that guy. So like, maybe that's kind of what NFL teams are looking at. It's like, okay, well, he's not going to, that's not, this guy doesn't have the ceiling that I'm going to need to invest a first round draft pick and get to where I need to be. But Malik Willis, which is why his name keeps coming up over and over and over again, he could be that upside guy that a team could get tantalized by and be a top 10 pick. So as I mentioned before, we keep hearing that Malik isn't ready. I want to put some context to that. Can you tell our listeners why he's raw? What does he need to learn? And where does he need to improve?
Yeah, so there's a couple of things. One is the offense that he was asked to run was very simplistic. A lot of first read, if your first read wasn't there, you immediately take off and run, which is why he had those staggering rushing numbers, right? So the first thing is, at the NFL level, that's not a sustainable type of offense where you only have to make one read, and if it's not there, you run. Now, it could very much be a part of the game plan early on in his career, especially if he's asked to play early on. And it wouldn't be all that different than what Baltimore did. If anyone remembers back, I mean, Lamar Jackson has shown tremendous growth and development too at the NFL level as a passer. Anybody goes find the games that second half of the year when Lamar Jackson took over, they were running like 20, 30 times a game, the quarterback. And I don't think it would be to that level for Malik Willis, but right now, all he's really comfortable doing is getting the ball, you know, mostly out of a shotgun, getting the ball, looking for his first read. If the design play and the design first read on that play isn't open, he usually then is going to resort back to his elite level athleticism and take off running. So obviously the progressions, he has to show the ability at the next level that he can go through progressions, that he can find a secondary or third or fourth option and scan the football field. So that's definitely one thing that makes him raw. What he was asked to do at Liberty doesn't really translate in terms of schematically at the next level, especially for the long haul. Like I said, I think an offense could really simplify things early in his career, especially if he's playing as a rookie, you know, at some point this upcoming NFL season. So that's one thing. And I think with the progression reading, you could say mental processing, going through and understanding reading defenses and coverage. He didn't have to do a lot of that. And there were examples where, you know, he had an interception, you know, on a very similar play. And then a couple of weeks later, same exact thing, didn't see the coverage again. It was the exact same type of coverage. And he still made the poor decision and threw it where it shouldn't have been. And it led to a turnover. So there's some decision-making, reading coverages issues that came up, not just once, but repeatedly, you know, on his film. So I think the progression reading, what he was asked to schematically, mental processing, decision-making, reading defenses and coverage, that probably starts the, and I think that could kind of all almost be grouped together, even though there's a bunch of different layers in there in terms of what he was asked to do in terms of the plan, the game plan, and then, you know, reading defenses, reading coverages, and then going through progressions in a timely fashion that he isn't taking those sacks, right? If it takes him really long to process things, well, in the next level, everything's going to be bigger, quicker, faster. He's going to be getting sacked a lot, which I think early on, that's why he's going to be running so much until he gets more comfortable with that. The other thing that I would say is there's some inconsistent ball placement and there's some levels, you know, of accuracy issues. Again, this is one of those things The ball placement thing is more on him. Completion percentage and stuff like that, I rarely ever touch upon that, because that is so much about what, you know, who the receivers are he's throwing to. Are they asking him to push the ball vertically down the field? Or are they asking him, you know, a guy can be a 75% completion guy, but if he's only throwing bubble screens and 5-yard passes, well, what does that really tell you about a guy? That's not really solving NFL problems. So I think there's some accuracy and some ball placement concerns that he has to clean up a little bit. But to be honest with you, that's about a lot of these quarterbacks. Desmond Ritter has that. A handful of other quarterbacks in this class, there's some, you know, inconsistent ball placement and accuracy issues. So to me, I think those are the things that we need to kind of develop. And I'll say the last one, and this is another one that could almost go for everybody, is we didn't see him have to handle pressure too much, because one of two things either happened. Either he got sacked, like you talked about the high number, but most times when he saw the pressure coming, if possible, he got out of there and run. We know at the next level, there's going to be times that you have to be able to handle pressure, move away, show that the ability to play off structure. And I think he has it in his arsenal. We just didn't see a lot of him having to handle pressure, because a lot of times he just would take off running and use that rare athleticism. And let's be honest, the people he was going up against weren't NFL caliber athletes more times than not. So he could just outrun them. At the NFL level, he's going to be an elite level athlete for the quarterback position, but he's going to be, you know, he's going to have Micah Parsons and elite level defenders running him down too. So, you know, he's not always going to be able to rely on that athleticism to get him out of pressure. He's going to have to be able to show that he could stand tall in the pocket, move around, slide to the left, slide to the right, you know, buy himself a second or two and throw on the run and playoff structure. And he has it in his repertoire. There's just not a lot of instances of having him throw after handling pressure. He just usually took off and was able to get away from it, you know, or sometimes he turned back into the sack, which led to some of those high sack numbers as well. But I think those are the things that we need to see. And there's a lot, right? I just listed a lot of things, which is why he isn't locked into the top five or the top seven. And he might end up going top 10, but there's enough there, and him coming from Liberty in a lower level of competition, which is why there's this uncertainty about him. And he's not, for all his upside, locked into the top five or top 10 yet, because there is a pretty lengthy list of things that he's going to have to show that he can improve upon.
Yeah, you did a great job clearing that up for me, to be quite honest. And it's obviously college competition, right? Like, it's tough. Like, even when a wide receiver comes out of a small school and you're just like, well, I don't know. Like, he thrived there, but I don't know how he's going to do in the NFL. And then I think he kind of nailed it too with just what Liberty asked him to do. So if you look at that simply, you don't know how well he's playing against better competition, and he wasn't asked to do some of the things that the NFL is going to ask him to do. So you have a tiny, small sample size, or maybe you saw a really accurate throw, right? Or maybe you saw him actually escape pressure, but you don't have enough data or enough tape to look at it and say, oh, he can do this, or he will be able to do this with a little more. So I think you did a great job clearing that up for me, at least, hopefully our listeners as well. How important is the landing spot for Malik Willis? Does he need a team that knows how to utilize his strengths while slowly building on his weaknesses over time?
Yeah, I think it's going to be really important. And I mentioned a couple guys already in this episode, right? Baltimore was very conscientious and smart about how much they were willing to put on Lamar Jackson's plate that first year. And they knew that they knew his limitations. And they created a scheme that was very run-based. And again, we probably will never see a team run that much from the quarterback position as Lamar did that year one. But I think, you know, even if we say, look what Buffalo did with Josh Allen, right? Like, would Josh Allen be the guy he is right now if he went to a different team and I just suffered as a Giants fan with Jason Garrett for, you know, would he have developed into the quarterback that he is? I'm sure he would have still been a good quarterback, but they brought him along and they knew what his limitations were. And even that first year when people were still hating on Josh Allen because some of the accuracy and the ball placement things, he still was putting up some really impressive games, even as he was still being criticized by people, because they were putting him in positions to be successful. They knew what he what his skill set was, and they were trying to maximize that skill set. So I do think it's important. You know, if he ends up on a losing team with a bad offensive line and an uncreative offensive coordinator, or somebody who kind of still is kind of set in their ways, you know, we saw it just this past year. I think it's a perfect example. Matt Nagy refused to create an offense that catered to Justin Fields' skill set.
Great.
And as a guy who loved Justin Fields, and as a guy who, you know, invested in Justin Fields in fantasy leagues and stuff, like, I was disappointed in that. Like, you made the investment, you traded up, you gave up a future first round pick that turned into the seventh pick in this draft, and then you don't create an offense. It looked like they had the exact same offense, you know, for, you know, two different style quarterbacks when the year started, for Andy Dalton and then when Justin Fields took over, it's like they didn't even switch. And how could that be the case? They're completely polarizing players, polar opposite players in terms of what they bring to the table. So, yeah, I think it's a really important spot where you have to, I would hope, with all the due diligence, that if you're going to invest in a guy like Malik Willis, and it's not going to be at the top, maybe it's not going to be at the top of the draft. I don't want to say it's not going to be at the top of the draft, because Carolina, Atlanta, you know, Seattle could all be in the mix. And even there's been rumblings about Detroit. Mm-hmm. You would like to think, if it is a team at the top of the draft and they truly believe he could be a franchise quarterback, that you're going to build an offense that caters to his skill set. A lot of RPO concepts, get him on the move, a lot of moving the launch point, which means a lot of rollouts, and, you know, get him out of, if he's uncomfortable inside the pocket, we'll get him out in space because that's his comfort zone. That's his wheelhouse. If he doesn't see something there, then he can take off and use those legs and athleticism. That's what Baltimore did with Lamar. That's what Buffalo did with Josh Allen. He needs to be in a place that's going to maximize his athleticism and his ability to use that to open up things in the passing game. And if you just try to ask him to be a traditional pocket passing quarterback, it's going to be a disaster. And it's going to be very much similar how we saw some games this year from Justin Fields, that anybody who watched it would be like, how did this guy go in the first round? This guy was supposed to be a generational type quarterback prospect. He doesn't even look like he belongs, because they were putting him in situations that were not advantageous to him and his skill set.
Yeah, I love that you brought up Justin Fields. I think most of us would agree that that's exactly what happened to Justin Fields. A lot of us are still very excited about him, and with the coaching change, hope that, you know, some of that is going to change for Justin. And so just bringing up, you know, kind of everything that you just did about how, you know, team fit is so important. The four most common teams I see, and you listed almost every single one of them, Seattle, Carolina, Detroit, and Atlanta. Which of those four situations do you think would really, you know, help this player out?
In terms of, I think Atlanta would be the one that intrigues me the most, only because I think Arthur Smith would be the type of offensive mind that could really maybe maximize his skill set. You know, he got the best out of Ryan Tannehill when he was in Tennessee. He understands how to use the run game to set up the play action really well, which I think would be something that could really help out a guy like Malik Willis early in his career. You could do like those, you know, those RPOs where teams are going to be fearing that Malik Willis is going to run. I think he understands how to do that. Anyone who watches the Tennessee game knows at times Ryan Tannehill is a very good weapon on the ground with half of the athleticism of a guy like Malik Willis, but he knew how to call a really good game plan that maximized the, you know, Derrick Henry, and then got the best out of Ryan Tannehill. So I think of those four teams that you just mentioned, I think Atlanta would be the best in terms of the play caller and schematic fit. I also think there's been a lot of crossing T's and dotting I's with Pittsburgh. And that would be a really intriguing spot, because he would be going to a team that is surrounded by a lot more talent, not just at the skill players, but on the defensive side, which would bail him out at times and not put him in such disadvantageous situations. They have a great running game in Najee Harris, you know, so I could see Pittsburgh, you know, if we throw Pittsburgh in the mix, they would be my number one, say, option for him. Atlanta would be number two of those teams that we were talking about.
Great. That's awesome. And then just as a B question to that, you want to see him sit a little bit, right? You don't want to see him coming out week one.
Yeah, I think,
like,
even if
it's half the season, like, you don't want him coming out week one, right? Because that's the concern in Seattle, is that he would just play week one.
I don't think Seattle. See, to me, of all the situations, Seattle might be the worst one. I just don't think that would be a good fit for him in terms of the type of offense they run, in terms of the lack of creativity that they have there. I think he should probably sit for a little bit. I think if you are going to start him, I think it would be with the understanding that you're going to run a very simplified offense. And I don't see a scenario where he's starting day one. Even the teams that we just listed, they all have bridge guys there, right? Like Atlanta has Mariota now. They didn't give him that money and not him even start. I think he'll be there. And Carolina is an interesting one because I think at this point they know what Sam Darnold is and they might be itching to get off of that. Seattle, Drew Lock, I think we kind of know. So Seattle and Carolina, he might get put into the mix a little bit quicker. I think if it happened to be Detroit, I think Goff would start for sure, at least the first couple games, first month of the year. Atlanta, same thing. I think it would be Mariota to start. Pittsburgh, I'm sure it would be Trubisky to start. How soon? I don't know if there's a perfect time frame. I do believe that guys develop and learn better by taking their lumps, provided you're not putting them in such a situation that they're just getting destroyed behind a horrific offensive line or something like that. Like a guy like Malik Willis and a lot of the things that I talked about, he's not going to learn how to go through progressions sitting on the sideline. He's not going to learn how to run an NFL offense. Yeah, he'll get better at it in practice and stuff like that. But until the bullets are flying for real, he's just not, so a lot of Malik Willis's, development that's needed is going to be on the football field. And that's for most quarterbacks. He's just got to start playing against better competition, right? And showing that he can do some of those things. But I think in terms of like reading defenses and coverages, that could really be worked on, off the football field a little bit too, in the film room and stuff like that. And being around a quarterback, a veteran type quarterback could really help him have a better understanding of that. So I don't think it's ideal for him to start right off the bat. And I do think if he is, you got to be very smart with what you ask of him to do. And it's amazing. These guys get paid millions and millions of dollars, these coaches and coordinators. And sometimes they don't really seem like they're putting their players in the best situation to succeed in terms of maximizing their strengths. He needs to go somewhere where they understand right now what he can and can't do and put him in a position to try to be successful.
These are all excellent points. This is our second year doing these rookie player profiles. And the thing that listening back to year one, I wanted to kind of learn from and build is that we let you guys choose your player. So typically what happens there, and we still think that's our secret sauce, is allowing, great minds like yourself to pick a player that they're passionate, that they want to talk about. I know you loved Devonta Smith last year. We had a lot of fun talking about him. And sometimes people pick them because they love them. Sometimes they pick them because they just think that player needs a voice. But that I have fashioned my questions this year to dig deeper and get a little bit more negative. And I think we did a lot of that. We really talked about a lot of Malik's maybe challenges, some things like he's going to need the perfect team. He's going to need this. He's going to need that. This last question, let's hype him up, right? We got real. I want to hype him up now. This is an exciting player. Tell me, get me excited about Malik Willis and why I should be excited about Malik Willis.
Well, if we just stay with this quarterback class for a second, he's far and away the best arm talent in terms of his velocity, strength, pushing the ball down the field, and far and away the best athlete. So you're talking about, we live in a world that you want a playmaker now at the quarterback position, right? The days of the traditional pocket passing quarterback, they are gone. Like Mac Jones last year is an outlier. Like there's not going to be a lot of guys like Mac Jones anymore who go round one. It's just not the way the NFL is being played now. So you're talking about a guy that has, I don't want to say he's got Lamar level athleticism in terms of running ability, but he's not that far off of that. And then you talk about a guy who's got top level arm talent as well. Again, not Josh Allen or Patrick Mahomes, but he's in the same zip code. He's in the same neighborhood. He's in the surrounding zip code. So we're talking about a guy who possesses the arm talent to be the upper 10 quarterbacks in the league in terms of arm strength and the velocity he can throw on the football. And we're talking about a guy who's going to be in the top 3 to 4 in terms of straight athleticism, running ability. And those two things by itself do not make a good quarterback, or there'd be lots of athletic quarterbacks with big arms who would be playing in the NFL. But those are the two things of why he's got the arm talent to make every throw, which means he's got the athleticism to make plays with his legs when plays breaks down. He can throw on the run. He can make those special plays that we've seen Mahomes make, Josh Allen make, Lamar Jackson, Justin Herbert. He's got that in his repertoire. Now, the question is, we know we're going to see those splash plays. Can the other plays, can there be a more consistent game around that? But it's very few prospects and very few guys, even in the NFL, have that ability to match arm talent to athleticism. And that's where it's rare that, you know, both are so high, right? Like, you know, we see guys that have great arm talent. We see guys who have great athleticism. Rarely do we see one guy possess both of those as high level traits, not like good or very good. I would say arm talent and athleticism for Malik Willis is bordering on great for both of those. You know, the athleticism part is great to elite, and the arm talent is probably somewhere between very good and great when you're comparing them to other, you know, high level players at the NFL level. So those are the two things that get him excited. And if we're talking fantasy football, this is a guy who can be right there behind Lamar Jackson in terms of most rushing yards for quarterback. You know, he possesses that type of upside in terms of his rushing capability. But his arm talent is superior than what Lamar Jackson's was coming out of college, like, for sure. So that's the thing that gets me excited about him, that combination of, you know, I think people are doing him a major disservice. And last summer when I watched him, I did think some Jalen Hurts, but I quickly came off of that take because it's doing him a disservice in terms of he's got more athleticism, more rushing ability, more elusiveness and straight line speed than Jalen Hurts. And his arm talent is on a different level than a guy like Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts has got a good arm in terms of pushing the ball vertically down the field, but his mechanics and his release aren't as clean. So it looks a little bit weird at times. Malik Willis's arm talent is on a different level than a guy like Jalen Hurts. So I think when there's some Jalen Hurts comps thrown out there, I think it's a little bit disingenuous. I think maybe I understand it from the reading, the stuff that we talked about earlier in the episode, the progression reading and what they ask him to do and going through reads and reading coverages, that I could understand a comparison to Jalen Hurts. But I think the traits alone, I think he's far superior in both athleticism and arm talent to a guy like Jalen Hurts.
Yeah, you got me excited about him. I'm going to add one more thing that you mentioned at the top of the show that meant a lot to me and I didn't reiterate, so I'll reiterate it here. You told me about how smart he was, how dedicated to the game he was, that whiteboard stuff. That's going to be the stuff that I think with all those natural talents that'll give him the best chance to win in the NFL. So if you're feeling good about that, I'm feeling pretty good about Malik Willis.
Yeah, and I'll chime in one thing that also, again, what I've seen is so limited, but there's a lot of people who are at the Senior Bowl, who are at the Combine, you know, guys that I respect tremendously. And anytime you see him, even if you watched his pro day this past week, like he just, I want my quarterback to have this confidence about him. Mm. And this is a guy coming from Liberty. Mm-hmm. And every single thing I have seen of him, from the Combine to the Senior Bowl, anything that I've had access to watch, this is a guy that walks around like he belongs. There's like in a people kind of gravitate towards him. He handles himself extremely well with the media and stuff like that. He just has this personality about him that he seems and comes across as a leader, even as a guy who played at Liberty, not Alabama or somewhere like that. And I think that combined with what you hear about his personality and his character, it's all of that combined with the arm talent and the athleticism, which is why I'm going to believe in the talent that he could overcome the areas that he needs to work on and fix. I'm going to buy the kid. I'm going to buy those traits and say, you know what? He's going to figure it all out when he gets the right coaching and in the right spot. He has that high level upside because I know he's a worker, all intents and purposes, everything talked about him, a great kid, great character. And then you add that on top of special traits. I think I'll take my chances on that.
Yeah, I love it. I love how we did this show. I love how we dug deep. And I don't want to say criticized the guy, but we challenged like what he can and cannot do. And we ended on such a high note. Great, great player profile. Let's segue into the rest of the 2022 rookie class with our last two questions and get you out of here. Who is your guy in this year's draft? One guy you're hanging your hat on and saying, you know what, this guy won't let me down. I want him.
Yeah, so it's not a guy at the tippy top of anybody's draft ranks, and it's James Cook out of Georgia. This is the guy that we've been talking about Saturday to Sunday for quite some time, and he's going to be a guy that today's NFL, the way the NFL is played now, I think he's going to be a guy that, fast forward a couple years, I'm not saying he's going to have this level of success, because I never envisioned the level of success he's had, but we looked at Alvin Kamara's college career, and we looked at it at Saturday to Sunday as he was not maximized and utilized to his full potential. And I think that's what we're going to say about James Cook. Now, part of it's because Georgia is just loaded and stacked. But I think this is a guy for today's NFL who's going to be utilized in an Alvin Kamara-like role that could be an impact receiver and a guy who can also be a good runner. He's not going to be a bell cow. He's not going to be a focal point of an offense in terms of the run game, but he could be one of the most pivotal players on a team's offense. He'll start out probably being mixed in, but I love, to me, he's my RB4. I could even make the case that he should be RB3 in terms of his importance to an offense, over a guy like Isaiah Spiller. But I think he's going to be a guy that, you know, Dalvin Cook's younger brother, he's got it in the bloodlines. But I think the athleticism, the receiving capabilities, making people miss, the bursts, I really like James Cook. And to me, the absolute floor is James White, who's had a great NFL career. And I think, you know, maybe the ceiling is not Alvin Kamara, but that's the type of role he could have at the next level. I think James Cook should be a guy who goes on late round two or somewhere on round three. And I think he could become an integral part of an offense as a guy who could do a lot of things and really be very versatile to a team at the next level, because he can line up in the slot. He can be a weapon out of the backfield, catching passes, run wheel routes, screen passes. But then in the NFL, where you're spreading everything out, he can be a really effective runner, especially when you're running out of like the shotgun and out of the spread offense. There's a lot to like about James Cook. I think he could be a guy who would be like a 12 to 13 touch type player. And you mix that up with receptions and rushes. I'm really high on James Cook. He's a guy that I've been kind of pounding the table for all year. My coworker, my co-host Matt Caraccio, has been on this guy for years. And we kind of finally are excited to kind of see him come to the forefront this year and get more of the national attention. But James Cook would be my guy that I'm excited for.
Love that one. All right. One guy you won't touch and everyone's going to overdraft.
I don't know. This is a tough question, because there's not a guy who I won't touch at the right price.
Of course.
But I think I'm a little bit behind people in terms of, I'll say two guys, Drake London and Trey McBride. I have some reservations about those guys. I don't have as much reservation about Drake London as I had about N'Keal Harry a couple years ago, but I am concerned a little bit that people pigeonholing him as an elite level outside wide receiver. I have my reservations about that. I like him. I've comped him to part Brandon Marshall, part Mike Evans, but that means his skill set at college, which was dominating at the catch point, has to be able to translate. And everything was mostly at the catch point. He's fluid with his feet, former basketball player, so he's pretty good after the catch, even for a big guy. But there wasn't a lot of separation. So that's my one concern about a guy like Drake London. He dominated with his physicality, his massive size. He was really good after the catch. You know, Greg Cosell, whose opinion I respect tremendously as well, like he said, he reminds him, he's not a huge fan either. He said he reminds him a lot of Marcus Colston. And I can see that. So like, there's that slot type player, not a guy who creates a lot of separation. Now, I think I like him more than a guy like Marcus Colston. Like I said, he's my number five wide receiver right now, and he'll probably stay there. But I know a lot of people who have him at one or two, you know, wow. And if he didn't get hurt, there's plenty of people who probably had him at one or two. And for me, you know, Garrett Wilson, Treylon Burks, Chris Olave, Jameson Williams, you know, he's coming in after those guys. So it's not that different than N'Keal Harry, where most people had him, everyone almost had him at one, and I had him at like five or six. Similar here. I like Drake London, the player, more. I think part Brandon Marshall, part Mike Evans sounds great, but I think people are going to push him to maybe the top of their wide receiver rankings. And I would be a little bit more hesitant just because there are some concerns about his game translating with the separation. He's going to have to be as great as he was at the catch point in college. He's going to have to be that great at, you know, in the NFL. And I think he could do it. I heard someone today compare him to Keyshawn Johnson. So if he's that, he's fine. I think some people are maybe thinking he could be a dominant outside receiver. I'm not sure that's his game. And Trey McBride, I'll just say real quick, same idea. I have some separation concerns about him. I think he's fallen to the pack where there's no more round one, early round two talk. So all these tight ends should go round three or round four. So if that's where he's going, that's fine. But I know some people have him as the clear tight end one. I have him a little bit further down my tight end ranks, like three or four. Doesn't sound like a lot, but when everyone is basically has him at one, I'm a little bit down on him compared, relatively speaking.
These are they were great ones. Thank you so much. We haven't, I don't know how many player profiles we have in the bank, but none of those names have been brought up yet. So I love all of them. Paul, thank you so very much. I could not have done the show without you. Please tell everyone where they can find you, your content, or anything else you have coming up that you want to talk about.
Yeah, so you can find me at Twitter at Paulie2PreNY. Obviously, Saturday to Sunday football podcast. You can find it on any podcast device. And then, obviously, if you enjoy what I just talked about here or anything, please get over to the website. The easiest way to get there is ssfootball.com and check out our premium notebooks. And for $9.99, you get access to all our premium content. You immediately get our scouting notebook, which has like 100 player profiles, full detailed scouting reports on the offensive skill players, strengths, functional areas, developmental areas, NFL role, NFL projection, how they win, fantasy spin. You get my rankings notebook, which has all our rankings, draft eligible, draft rankings, tier draft rankings. We'll have our dynasty rookie rankings for this year. It still hasn't been updated from last year as they enter their, you know, their first offseason, as our Devy rankings. And it has positional dynasty rankings as well. And then in April, you get the draft projections notebook, tabs for every position, offense and defense, about 400 players in that, a snapshot of how they win, some developmental or concerning areas. And then I rank that by everything I'm hearing to kind of give you a guide of how I expect it to go down on draft weekend. And then we have a tab that we try to project every guy who goes in round one, every prospect who goes in the first three rounds, and then our best guess of trying to project every single player that gets taken in the entire NFL draft. I think this year the count is 262, the most picks has ever been in an NFL draft. So I will have to try to guess and predict what 262 players will be taken in the draft. You can get all of it for $9.99. Price get you all of it. It really helps us out. We put all the money right back into the show and everything we need to continue to do what we do at Saturday to Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, I'll vouch for it. It's incredible, guys. Seriously, for $10, it's an absolute steal. If you think about everything that Paul just said and the work that goes into that, and I promise you, it is a lot of work. And I'm 3 years running. I bought the notebooks for 3 years in a row now, and it helps my analysis. It helps give me a different perspective on these players. Paul is watching these players a lot longer than I am. You guys know that. That's why we bring on these experts to talk about these rookies better than Swags and I can on Rookie Fever. We'll get caught up when they join the NFL, and we'll be talking about them more than anybody else. But in the meantime, somebody like Paul and those notebooks, they're priceless. They really are. Thanks again, Paul. And thank you, our listeners, for allowing us to hit your ears. This is the Rookie Fever Podcast. Please do not forget to rate and review, and please do not forget to be awesome. When you kiss me, fever, when you hold me tight, fever in the morning, fever all through the night, sun lights up the daytime, moon lights up. Everybody's got the fever.
there's something you all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago now.
Who got the 101 scouting? He's never done this to before and run. I told you anyone, science must be just on real landing spot, not ideal. Wait, when's this breakout? A full rookie fever stage.
Romeo loved Juliet. Juliet, she felt the same. When he pulled his arms around her, he said, Julie, baby, you're my flame. I'll give a fever. When we kiss it, fever with our flame in you. Fever, I'm a fire. Fever, yeah, I burn for soon.
Got the fever, cause I got the fever, now you got the fever, so she got the fever, and he got the fever, no cure for the fever, so let's beat the fever, thank God for the fever,
thank God for the fever.
Now you got the fever, 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 now you got the fever,